Good morning, everyone. Happy Mother's Day. And today I really want to talk about Mother's Day and mothers and love and things like that. But first, let me talk about where we are in this unfolding of this pandemic. So this morning when I drove here from my home, which is 3 minutes away, and I pulled into the parking lot, there were a few more cars than usual. Usually for the past month or two, when I pulled in the parking lot on a Sunday, there'd be one or two cars. This morning, there were four or five cars. And when I came in the hall, instead of our usual gang of four, we have been joined by Sam and Marilyn Warlick and David Brosh and Molly Conlon Hall. And that is because, well, for those of you who live in Florida and those of you who perhaps don't, Florida is in the process of reopening. Coming out of its sequesteredness. And it is the reverse of what we had before. We sort of all went back home, hunkered down, and now, like animals coming out of hibernation, we are coming out. And people are out. People are out and about. Some people are clearly obeying or following the protocols of social distancing and masks, and I would say the majority are not. And that is the state of Florida. I don't know how it is in other parts of the country, but Florida, in terms of the shutting down and the sequestering, was a laggard. And yet, in terms of coming out, we are full steam ahead. So it's an interesting state. And in the midst of this unfolding, that has many complexities to it. And I think we need to be respectful of the complexities to it. It is a so-called medical emergency, and therefore, scientists and the medical field needs to be listened to and heeded. But also, this is an economic crisis, political crisis, so to speak. And for many people, a personal crisis that's exacerbating many of the already existing problems in our society, the fragmented nature of our healthcare system, the difficulty people have of accessing quality healthcare, the lack of a safety net for people, I mean, especially people who need that safety net of support. So when the order goes out to sequester and stay home, many people, that's an extreme burden. When people are told to work from home, some of us are able to, but some of us are not able to. So it's a complex situation. And I think we need to be respectful of that and be careful of our attachment to our views and our self-righteousness at this time. We're all entitled to our views. But we should have some humility about our views and always be willing to, this is our practice, to understand others. As I think I might have said before in past Sunday talks, Many of us who have been able to be sequestered and be more safe during these times have only been able to do that because other people have not. Other people are still picking our vegetables and shipping our vegetables and trucking our food and stocking the shelves. And for those of us who have had deliveries or whatever, it's only because other people are doing that. And that's okay with us, you see. But we have to, you know, be mindful that, you know, even sequestering in these times without a social safety net, without support, without economic support, it could be very difficult for people. As well as I think our community, the kind of people who come to our community, sort of a semi-retreat, may not be as difficult as it is for others. Being disconnected has not been as difficult for some of us than perhaps others. Perhaps of us, our home or our living situation, the people we're around, may not be like others. Some people may find great difficulty in where they are or being with who they are or with. We are navigating uncharted waters, my friends. And as I think I've said in earlier times, this pandemic is unfolding within this understanding we have that to have a human body is to be subject to the potential of illness, sickness, aging, and death. I mean, this is the context in which we live, and the great fragility of life, and the impermanence of life, and instability of life. You know, I think many people are having difficulty these days with the pandemic because it's really interfering with their plans. You know, the stability of their lives. We feel we have a right to go to work, right? We have a right to go about and enjoy ourselves and eat out and drink and see our, you know, I mean, we. And we have a sense of how life should be unfolding for us. And I think our culture does not do well when our sense of entitlement to the way things we think should be often are challenged. And, you know, this is a significant challenge, but it could be just a practice. Those of us who live in Florida, we live always at this time of year with the threat of hurricanes. Can be devastating and certainly can change the course of our life. We know that the significant climate change that is affecting so many areas of life on this earth is still a significant issue and will continue to create great unstable situations for us. So hopefully we are using this time, those of us who are in the tradition of looking deeply, of seeing interconnections, seeing causes and conditions, trying to understand something deeply before we just react emotionally. Or with attachment to views, that we are using this time to really look deeply into a lot of our deeply held beliefs about how things should be, how the world should be, how people should be, how I should be, how my life should be, and really accept things, understand things as they really are. One might call it the mess of this life, the sloppiness of this life, the unpredictability of this life, the incredible diversity of this life. and that the winds not only of sickness, old age, and death, and impermanence are raging, but you know, there's also a pandemic of ignorance, of anger, fear, that also rages, a lack of connection, a lack of love and compassion for many. This is perhaps the more serious pandemic that is moving about this world, a more serious infection. But perhaps that is why we are here. That is why we practice. So we as individuals, we as a community can become healthy. Can become healthy cells in the body of the world. And coming together not just as individuals, but as a community, that creating a Sangha body gives more power and solidity to this desire we have to create another set of causes in the same way, I guess, there are viruses that do harm. Perhaps there are viruses, if I misspeak, please don't hold it against me, but perhaps there are viruses that do good. And perhaps we want to start an epidemic, a pandemic of goodness, that each of us can be a part of, spreading. Goodness, kindness, patience, understanding, etc. And again, in the same way, the virus doesn't care, doesn't discriminate who it infects. It's really practices impartiality. And hopefully we, in our cultivation of all that is altruistic and good, are also cultivating impartiality. Don't just give all your goodness, don't just give all our understanding, don't just give all our love just to people who agree with us, just to people who are in our circle. And that will not benefit the world greatly. We need to be impartial and share our love and understanding, our compassion, our patience, impartially. I mean, this is the teachings of the Buddha. This is the teaching of the Bodhisattva path, this impartiality. All beings are my children. As this is Mother's Day, we can think of that. A parent may have many different types of children. Some who do this and some who do that. Some who live more congruent with the way they like to live, and some perhaps who rebel against that, and some who choose a different path. But usually a loving parent does not right the ones who choose another path or have different views off. Do not hate them. Do not wish ill of them. A loving parent still loves. A loving parent still does their best to understand. And will always do their best to find those areas within that relationship to nourish positive things and to not nourish things that are afflictive. So hopefully in our relationship with the world and the people of the world, and in this time of pandemic, when we see people acting the way we'd like them to act, and we see many people acting the way we don't want them to act, we watch our minds and ask ourselves, am I cultivating the mind of deep understanding? Am I cultivating the mind of deep love and compassion in this moment? If not, then what am I cultivating? So, in our leaders meeting every week, we are realizing that Florida is in the state, and much of the country is in the state of reopening. And so we're going to be trying over these coming weeks and months to navigate that in a way that we feel is, respectful of the science, et cetera. So in the state of Florida now, actually in the state of Florida, my understanding, religious groups could always meet. They were never forbidden. They were never told not to. But as long as they were following the protocols of 6-foot distancing and, et cetera, they were allowed to meet. So by shutting down the way we did, we actually were on the more conservative side. Lots of variation. So our leaders are meeting, and we know, the community is beginning to open in Tampa and St. Pete and other parts of Florida. So we kind of experimented earlier in the week. I don't know if everybody can see it, but how to set up our hall. Our hall is now set up that we can hold with everybody at a 6-foot-plus distance. We can hold maybe 25 or 30 people in this hall. It's a big enough hall to do that. And sort of we invited some of our members in. We kind of doubled our attendance this morning, sort of a little kind of practice as we did it, invited people in, had the sanitizer outside, and everyone's wearing masks. And so here we are practicing what we've been told to practice, practicing modeling good behavior in terms of the pandemic. And again, it seems to be that we are coming out, and hopefully that people have learned how to, live in a way that does not enhance the spread of the virus, but helps contain it through the social distancing, through the not touching the face, and the washing of the hands, all the things that we have been doing. And hopefully that will keep us safe. So it is a work in progress. We are responding to causes and conditions. And so, Mother's Day. For me personally, this is a new experience. I'm 75 years old, and for 75 years, I've had a mother. So I've always had a mother on Mother's Day to be with, pretty a lot of time to be with. Sometimes couldn't be to call, at least, to send flowers to. Actually, I think I'm usually not in the hall the weekend of Mother's Day, because I'm usually, for the many years, gone down to Naples to spend the weekend with her. So today, there was no one to call. And in the past few days, there was no one to send flowers to. Birth and death, coming and going. This is the nature of this world. So I want to talk to you about mothers and Mother's Day and mother's love. Which is, we find it in the Bodhisattva path, We find very much the analogy historically in most traditional societies, including our own, when it was more traditional. Mothers had an elevated place. As real representatives of a human being who put their children, others, ahead of their own needs, would sacrifice their own needs for the sake of their children, would be willing to go through difficulty and pain for the sake of their children, demonstrated love and caring for another human being, i.e. their children. So mothers always had, a special role traditionally. And what I have here, I don't know if this can be seen, is a little booklet. It has a Vietnamese title, but underneath it, it says "A Flower for You." And this is I think, the first English edition from 1983. I think it has been reissued. I think it's called something like "A Rose for Your Coat, Your Pocket." But then it was called "A Flower for You." And this is the first bilingual edition from 1983, when it was translated from the Vietnamese by Helen Coutant. And it was first printed in Vietnam in 64, and it looks like Thich Nhat Hanh Thai wrote it in 1962. And so there's an inscription on the first page dated August 20th, 1992. 38 years ago. And it says, "Gifts and cards could not express better my thoughts, feelings, and good wishes for your birthday than this little book. May you live to be 100. With deepest love, your son, Fred." And those of you who know my mother lived to be 102. So there you go. Surpassed the expectation. And actually, the most of the book is actually in Vietnamese, and it's interesting, the English is kind of in the back, sort of an addendum. So it obviously was published primarily for the Vietnamese audience back in 83. And it's quite beautiful. I don't know if any of you have read it recently. And again, I think it's called now "A Rose for Your Pocket," and probably if you don't have it, there's probably a PDF somewhere on the internet. And it seems like the reason that Thay came to write this in the early 60s, he I forget the reason now, but he was in Japan. And he was walking around one day, I think in May, with some fellow monks and a Japanese young woman who knew, I think, a Japanese person he was with or a Japanese monk he was with, kind of stopped him in the street and then whispered something into the monk who spoke Japanese, or maybe he was Vietnamese who spoke Japanese. And then after he replied, the young woman took out of her pocketbook a white carnation and gave it to Thay. And he had no idea what it was about, but he said, "Thank you." But I guess after she had left, if I remember, he asked his friend what that was about. And basically what it was about was, it was Mother's Day. Now, Mother's Day really came from America, but this was sort of, it's been adopted by lots of countries in the world. But in Japan, the tradition was, if your mother was still alive, you wore a red carnation. But if your mother was dead, you wore a white carnation. And I think if I remember, Thay said at that moment, When his friend told him why he was given a white carnation, he said he was just struck with grief, realizing, you know, what it meant, and that he was an orphan at this time. The little essay, I guess you'd call it, that's been turned into a booklet, it begins, "When I think of my mother, I cannot separate her image from my idea of love. For love was the natural ingredient in the sweet, soft tones of her voice. Love is the nourishment you need to grow. Love is the nourishment you need to grow. Without it, you will be stunted, although you may seem to be grown." And he puts quotes around grown. Isn't that interesting? And I think that's, we'll put aside mother for the moment. Love is the nourishment you need to grow. Without it, you will be stunted, though you may seem grown. Is that true? Just close your eyes a second. Is that true? For yourself, first begin with yourself. Of all the various attitudes or emotions, sort of bigger than that, because love is complex, is love the nourishment that one really needs to grow emotionally? And that without love, our growth, our emotional growth is stunted. I mean, can we just reflect on that without any kind of judgment or blame or feeling bad, you know, all the places we go, and just kind of be objective? Is that true? Is that true in my own life? Is my own development, my emotional development, was it stunted because I didn't get enough of that nourishment of love when I was a child and growing up? Same way children, poor children who lack an adequate diet or nutrition, even though they may have food, oftentimes their growth is stunted because they lacked nutrition as a child. And that can be seen. But we have to look inside a little bit if we want to acknowledge that perhaps our own emotional growth, which really means our own capacity to feel safe and open and relaxed and open-hearted and loving, was stunted. It got a little twisted. It got a little shut down. It got a little walled off. I mean, all kinds of words. In Buddhism, we always look deeply at the causes and conditions. If we understand the cause, and again, it's important that we kind of do this introspection without blaming, and which is hard for many of us. We'll talk about mothers and fathers in a moment. Love is the nourishment you need to grow. Without it, you will be stunted, though you may seem grown. On the day I lost my mother, I wrote in my diary, "The greatest calamity has happened." Even when you were an adult and living away from your mother, her loss leaves you feeling as disconsolate and abandoned as any small orphan. So let us begin by looking on the positive side. I think as Americans in our culture, we tend to often look on the negative side, what's wrong rather than what's right, what's missing rather than what we have. Obviously, when you read Tai's essay, and I hope you do. Or if you read the Bodhisattva teachings on love and compassion, where you often, you know, the Bodhisattva is often compared to, a loving mother and father who loves all beings equally. And we're asked to look at all sentient beings as if they were our mother. But that meditation only works if you have within your mind a sense that, and again, it comes from our own personal experience. Is mother, kind of an archetype, a model within our own minds of all these positive qualities? Please take a moment and look in yourself. When I say the word mother, does it only have positive associations? Because you read Thich Nhat Hanh's book and you go to most traditional cultures and that's what you hear. And probably maybe in our culture it was that way. I don't know. The archetype of mother is one of selfless love, willing to endure hardship, pregnancy, childbirth, feeding, clothing, keeping us warm, changing us, staying up with us at night if we were ill, holding us. Keeping us alive. So this is the way they see their mothers. Even if her quality as a mother may not have been ideal, but there's great sense of, for most mothers, there was always this sacrifice. But please take a moment to just look within yourself. Is that your, when you say the word mother to yourself, do you think of someone who gave you life? That without her, we would not be here? And so therefore, everything that we've unfolded in life can only have come from her, whatever her shortcomings. And that in most cases, she did preserve our life. How have we internalized the word mother, the image mother in our hearts? Or father? And how has that conditioned us in this life? Not only in terms of our emotional growth, as Tai has talked about, but our capacity to trust. To trust others. To believe that others have our good in their minds or not. How has that affected our own capacity to love, selfless love? If we don't have that model, what is that? Then how do we proceed? Can one have the model even if one didn't have it in reality? You know, models are very important. That's why we have Buddhas up here on the altar. That's why we have Bodhisattvas. They're models. That's why we have teachers. They're models. They model for us the way to be. But many of us were wounded, disappointed in those most fundamental models of mother and father, and therefore perhaps trust, love, respect, acceptance has been challenging for us in this life. If we had a mother that was the way Thay talked about, and the whole book is a paean to mothers, a fountain of love. He does songs and poems from the Vietnamese tradition and just gives one example after the other. Very sweet. Very fortunate if in this life we had a mother like that, right? But what if we didn't? You see, I think many people might look at Thay's book and go, oh, I don't know, have a distaste for it, or be jealous, or get angry, right? I mean, we are funny people. We don't take joy in the joy of others. We often say, but what about me? How come I didn't have it, right? Yeah, so what if we didn't have it? What do we do? Well, the first thing I'd say, if we didn't get it from our mother and our father, why not? Why couldn't they give it? Did they have a mother and a father who stunted their growth? And did their mother and father have mothers and fathers who stunted their growth? In our culture, psychological culture, we tend to blame. We tend to reify people as individuals and things. And we blame them. But in Buddhism, we see everything as the product of causes and conditions. And that people are just swept along by their causes and conditions until they wake up, until they find another way, a way to heal, a way to transform. Perhaps our mother and fathers were like that. Perhaps what we got was really their best. because of their causes and conditions, both from their past, their childhood, but also, you know, what happened to them in this life. Thich Nhat Hanh says, to love is to understand. Many of us think to love is like a warm, fuzzy Hallmark card kind of thing. But Thay says, to love is to understand. Perhaps because of her own causes and conditions, our mothers could not love us in this totally nourishing way. But can we love her? Can we understand her? See, that's the real thing. Rather than always focusing on what I didn't get, what I should have gotten, what I was entitled to get, practitioners look at it the other way, even more so. Yes, that may be true, but what am I giving? What am I giving? Am I giving back to my mother what she gave to me? Then how am I any better? That I'm just a product of my causes and conditions. The Buddhist path is a path of transformation, change. We can turn things around. But that's why it's important to have these models, these ideals. You know, we may be far away from Buddhahood. We may be far away from living as pure bodhisattvas in this life. Fountains of wisdom and understanding and love and compassion. But knowing that these beings exist, that the state of being a human being is within our reach, because other human beings have done it, shows us our potential, the possibilities of this human life. Yes, every thought we may have about all our mother's shortcomings may be true. But how about our shortcomings in the way we now relate to her or him? Are we sort of mimicking them without even knowing it? Yeah, so Thich Nhat Hanh advises he invites the readers of his essay he says, if I could give you any advice, he said, this afternoon when you come home from school or work, basically go to your mother and sit by her side. Ask her to stop what she's doing, but don't say much. After you've looked at her a long time closely, in order to really see her and see into her, and to truly realize, this is my mother, and she is now alive, seated beside us, or perhaps we're talking to her on a phone or Zooming. He says, take her hand and ask her this short question, which should get her attention. He says, mother, do you know what? A bit surprised, she'll look at you smiling. Know what? Still looking into her eyes, still smiling, can you reply? Did you know that I love you? This question needs no answer. Even if you are no longer a child, but 30 or 40, you can still ask it. For her, you are always a child. From that moment on, you and your mother will be content, filled with an awareness of an unending love between you. One day she will be gone. You will have no regrets, no feeling of pain and sorrow, as if she had never been there. And we might say this about our mother, it's Mother's Day, but we could be saying this about our fathers. We could be saying this about other people in our life, family, friends, children, parents, aunts, uncles, cousins. Can we take the time to say this to them, to stop? I mean, he's so beautiful, and he's a monk, and yet he's teaching us how to love our mothers, how to love each other. Stop. Take your hand. Look at her a long time and say to yourself, this is my mother, this is my father, this is my friend, this is my husband, this is my wife, this is my child, this is... Say that to yourself. Acknowledge. And ask them, do you know what? And when they say back to you, as they probably will, do I know what? What? How many of you of us are brave enough to say, do you know I love you? For some of us, this may take courage. Some of us may need to say it to ourselves. I know there was a workshop yesterday on the inner critic. So some of us may maybe begin with ourselves. Did you know that I love you? That may be scary for some of us. We have one of our things, you know, in our cotton culture is like, many people say, ooh, I don't want to be vulnerable, right? Don't want to expose my heart. You see. But that's because we're only thinking about what? We're thinking about ourselves. When we think about others, we are not afraid. When you say to somebody, do you know that I love you? You're not asking them to what? To say, I love you back. We're not concerned about their response. That's our fear. That's our privacy. That's our fear of vulnerability. We're looking like outside back. But this heart is a different heart. It's not like that. Do you know that I love you? It's just something we want to express to them. We don't need them to say anything back to us, do we? Because they have their own causes and conditions. Some may hear it and say it back to us, right? Some may be silent. Some may be kind of, oh, of course, I know that. I mean, who knows what people say because of their causes and conditions. But we know that from our side, there was something that needs to be said. So I see back in 1992, I was in my 40s, probably mid-40s, when I wrote this to her. And at the end, I wrote, "Mother, do you know what? Did you know that I love you?" So it's Mother's Day. It's not too late for any of us. If your mother is no longer with you, you can look at her picture, you can bring her to mind and say it. If she's still with you, some, again, it may be easy, some it may be more courageous. But we need to break out of our conditioning. We need to break out of our little boxes. We need to break into the freedom that our true heart, our true loving heart affords us. So I invite all of us to, on this Mother's Day, you know, to our mothers if they're still alive, to our fathers, to other people that we love, that we take the time to look at them, to connect with them, and say so simply, "Do you know that I love you?" Our interactions with our loved ones are always so what? Businesslike. What have you been doing? And you know, this, you know what I mean? This is our call. You know, what have you been doing? Funny, isn't it? You know, and like, how rarely we take the time to say something like that. To notice and bring attention to the glue that connects us. If we're interested in all the minutiae of their day, we could call anybody. and it could be that strangers would be more interesting than actually some of our family members, the minutiae of their day. But why do we ask them about their day and why do we listen? Because we love them. Right? So we want, we need these times to remember that, acknowledge that. So we have a few moments. I don't know, it's a little, I'm not sure if it fits in, but Angie, are there any, through the chat function, are there any questions about this teaching on love? And mothers and fathers.
So several comments, bowing with gratitude for the teaching. Someone said, I really don't think I love my mother. Should I say it anyway just to be kind? And somebody else said, I struggle. I needed this talk today. I struggle with my mother who did not and continues not to give love. I show up when she's ill, but it's a struggle. So several people asking about, you know, struggling with these difficult relationships with their mothers.
Yeah, so as I tried to say earlier, whether like in the Vietnamese tradition with Thich Nhat Hanh, in the traditional Buddhist tradition of the teachings on loving kindness and compassion, one often hears embedded in the teachings is this mother everybody understands, you know, a mother is the, you know, the epitome of love, right? Selflessness. Christianity has their Mary, and Buddhism has its Kuan Yin, Avalokiteshvara, you know, these sort of, traditionally it's, you know, the female energy is connected with love, historically. And yet, I remember often when I was in a position to talk to some of my Asian teachers or to kind of cue them in to American culture, that when they made these, when they gave these kinds of teachings or illusions, that they could be losing a significant number of their audience. And it was kind of unbelievable. They didn't quite get it, you know, because in their culture, it's like, you know, I mean, everybody's in agreement, I guess. Whether you really had it or not, I mean, everybody understands. But what I would say to the people who, because of causes and conditions, do not feel love for their mothers, or maybe feel anger or hurt in relationship to their mother, you know, that's where we begin. Again, traditionally, the antidote for those kinds of feelings is understanding of causes and conditions. And that's very important. I mean, it's really understanding karma, cause and effect, and how everybody, including us, is really a product of their causes and conditions, really helps us accept and understand that they were doing their best. They are doing their best. It's not personal. And a lot of times our anger at them, our hatred for them, or whatever, or lack of compassion for them is because we take it personally rather than seeing just an unfolding of causes and conditions. Again, also within the Buddhist tradition, there is our practices that help us get over our antipathy or our indifference to other beings, including our mother. Again, and what I've heard Asian teachers say, and I certainly agree, is, you know, how your mother showed up in life, her inadequacies, yes. But the bottom line is we would not be in life. We would not have had a life if it wasn't for her. And in Buddhism, having a human life and, you know, encountering a spiritual path and encountering the Dharma and finding a path of healing and transformation and finding a teacher, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is only because we were born into this life. And so, you know, that only came about through our mother, and whether she was good or bad, she did, at some great discomfort or pain, carry us for 9 months in her stomach, in her uterus, and she gave birth to us, which was not a pleasant experience often, and she did preserve our life, and for that we can be grateful. We can acknowledge that, for starters. But you know, our practice of loving kindness and compassion, for those of you who were at the retreat a couple of weeks ago, or come to our full moon, or just are familiar with these teachings, is all about learning to cultivate the mind of love and understanding and compassion. It's something we cultivate, we learn. We can learn to love somebody that is difficult to love. That is the test of our practice. As you've heard me say ad nauseum, it is easy to love someone who's loving to us. But to love someone who is difficult to love. And love doesn't mean, again, this is not the hallmark, you know, this is not the hallmark hour or whatever it's called. All right? This is life. It's not warm fuzzies. I think people get confused. They think, oh, well, if I love my mother, that means I have to smile every time I see her and feel. No, she may be very difficult. She may, you know, not be very, she may not be somebody who really you can relate to in that warm, fuzzy way, right? That just may be the way she is. Thich Nhat Hanh says, love is understanding. We drop our anger, we drop our hatred, we drop our indifference because we understand, one, they are the product of causing conditions, and two, they are suffering. They are not happy. Their minds are not at ease. And that should bring out compassion toward us. They're suffering. So please understand, when we talk about offering difficult people, challenging people love, it's not warm fuzzies. It's not hard hearts. It's not a Hallmark card. It's, I offer them understanding. I offer them kindness. I offer them my compassion. And we are all capable of generating that. You know, in the Buddhist tradition, it says, you know, sometimes we have, you know, in the Bodhisattva path, like in the teachings on generosity, it's, you know, if we really are the stingiest people around, it says, well, just practice, you know, put something in your left hand and give it to your right hand, you know, and then have your right hand give it back to your left hand. Kind of start there. Kind of have your left hand be generous to your right hand and your right hand be generous, you know, and when that becomes natural, you know, you can kind of begin to work up. Okay, so, yeah, but we can begin somewhere. We can understand that perhaps for some of us, some of our close relationships, our mother and our father, are challenging. But it doesn't mean that we can't get there. Maybe you can't get there today. But please understand, you want to get there someday. Right? And it's not that hard. I assure you, if you get out of the personal drama and all the personal disappointment and all the me, I, you, and just see them as a human being, product of their own causes and conditions, totally caught up, probably had a miserable childhood themselves or didn't have a loving mother, you know, who knows? You know, and they can't help being who they are. It's not personal. Our anger and our hurt is because it's personal. And we have this sense of entitlement. It should have been different. But how could it have been different? They were who they were. Yes.
Not really any more questions, but I just wanted to share because there's quite a bit of expression of love and gratitude on the screen that I'll just name that Mauricio bowed to our Sangha and said, do you know what? I love our Sangha. And there were many who bowed and saying, we love you, me too. So much gratitude for the teachings as well as to the Sangha that generates loving kindness. So very much a sentiment of love and people being moved and touched and feeling like this talk was very important. So thank
Good.
You.
And please remember, without sounding too, too whatever, you know, love is a muscle that we can develop. For some of us, it could be a weak muscle for all kinds of reasons. Our loving heart could be weak because we've kept it isolated. We've kept it hidden. We just haven't exercised it. But, you know, I see Maggie here in the front row. Maggie's a sports expert. Can even muscles that have not been exercised be developed and strengthened? Maggie's nodding yes. So please understand, we all start with where we start, but don't feel like you know you're stuck with it. If you go, yeah, I don't have much of a loving heart. I don't have much of a caring heart. I'm sort of walled off. I'm sort of indifferent. And you know your causes and conditions. That's fine. That's where we begin. But today is a new day. This moment is a fresh moment. Let us begin anew.